So, my name is John Connell. This is Nuts and Bolts of Cooperative Businesses. I work at Union Cab in Madison. Worked there for October.
Will be 12 years.
And I work with a group in Madison here called Madison Worker Cooperatives. We're a network of worker cooperatives in the Madison area. And the mission of the organization is to educate the community about cooperatives, to create support for existing worker cooperatives and develop new worker cooperatives. So we've been working for 5 years, and it's just a growing organization with the whole intention of building a larger cooperative economy in Madison. Recently, I've been working with Michael here in the audience amongst you all to form a group called the Dane Cooperative Alliance. Dane Cooperative Alliance is a network. Well, it's in the creation stages, but the idea is to create a network of all types of cooperatives, so not just worker cooperatives, what we call cross-sector collaboration. So that teaming up with credit unions, teaming up with GHC Group Health Cooperative, teaming up with Willie Street Cooperative here in town. So taking all the economic resources that exist within each cooperative business in the area, uniting them in a network and being able to leverage those, all of their individual economic like assets together to actually then help develop a stronger cooperative economy in the area as well. So there's a couple projects that are one that's been going on for a while now, this new Dane Cooperative Alliance. It's pretty exciting. And again, the whole idea is that by networking and connecting, we can empower the community and create a larger cooperative economy. How familiar is everybody here with cooperatives?
A few.
What forms of cooperatives?
Grocery.
Yeah.
Bank.
Banks. Credit. You said bank. Credit unions. Cool.
So disaster relief.
Disaster relief. Mm-hmm. What were you doing with disaster relief with the cooperative?
Occupy Sandy.
Occupy Sandy, what was that one?
Oh, it still is.
It still is. What is Occupy Sandy?
It's a cooperative that worked on disaster relief.
Oh, and is it something that existed before Sandy came through, or was it something that was put together as in response to the storm?
It was in response to the storm.
Oh, cool. Excellent.
One of the cool things about what they're doing also is helping businesses get started again in the areas hit by Sandy and setting them up as co-ops.
Oh, and your organization is helping do the development of the cooperative businesses?
I have difficulties with your wording. I would call it our organization.
Well, yeah. When
it belongs to the people, not necessarily to me.
Well, no, if it's a cooperative, only partially belongs to you. When I say your, it's your organization. The big your. Cool. Anybody else? Anybody been parts? Has anybody been a member of a worker cooperative? Yours sounds basically like a worker cooperative.
In some cases, yes.
Some cases? Okay.
It's like a hybrid.
So you have what would be called a multi-stakeholder. You have people working in it that are owners, as well as people that are receiving services from them are also stakeholders or owners?
Yes.
Cool. Excellent.
How about purchasing or business-to-business cooperatives?
Anybody been in a business that does that? Uses cooperative, purchasing cooperatives?
You've all probably shopped. There's data at one. Technically, Best Western is a cooperative at the largest corporate level.
Really?
Each one is independently owned and operated, and they get their services through the larger.
Huh.
What about REI?
REI is the largest consumer cooperative in the country. Yeah.
We have a biodiesel cooperative where we live in Baltimore, and that's where I get my biodiesel from.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. We had a biodiesel cooperative here in town for a while, and then they moved out of town, and I believe they've now gone away completely.
Ours is growing. We have another second station.
Really?
Yeah.
The nice thing is here we have Landmark, which is a huge cooperative, but they provide biodiesel, so we at least still have outlets through a cooperative. So you're from Baltimore?
I was
I took the cooperative taxi last night.
Oh, you were in one of our cabs. Yes. Perfect. Where, are you coming in at the airport?
No, I took it. I'm staying out in the country.
Oh, cool. Excellent.
We had a very high-level political conversation the entire way.
Yes. We've been at Union Cab. We've been told that we have the most educated cab drivers in the country. So it's quite a place. So where is everybody from?
I'm from Bloomington, Indiana, where we have five grocery store cooperatives called Bloomingfoods. Five different stores.
All part of one cooperative?
Yeah, all part of Bloomingfoods, yeah.
So cool. Do you have any idea how old they are?
About 30 years old.
30 years, wow, that's amazing.
It's been around for a long time. Just built a brand new store in my neighborhood.
Wow, that's amazing for 30 years. Where is it? Does everybody just want to go around and introduce yourself and say where you're from? You all have to do a couple activities with each other, so we might as well start getting to know each other.
South Florida.
You're from South Florida. What's your name?
Dave.
Dave. I'm Mark Balliot from Columbus, Ohio.
From where?
Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, nice.
I'm Terry Grace from the Chicago area.
I'm
Melinda
from Albuquerque.
Oh. You're just talking about Albuquerque last
night. I'm Michael from Madison.
We must meet you up front. I'm talking to you guys now.
Susan from Oakland, and we have Arismendi Bakery, which is a very
one of my favorites. I have one of my favorite models.
Yeah. I'm Braden from Baltimore.
Oh, okay. You guys. Oh,
we're all Baltimore.
Braden. I'm Kevin from Baltimore.
Excellent.
Margaret from Baltimore.
Polly Peterson from near Toledo, Ohio.
Oh, so it was me. So my name is Ivanka. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Excellent. Dad's family is from Philly. All right, so cooperatives, the format, I did this on open office, so some of the formatting might be a little weird since it's on a PowerPoint now, so hence the hanging S, so ignore any strange formatting. So cooperatives, how do they work? You all are fairly, everybody's got some experience with cooperatives. So, I mean, the most basic aspect of a cooperative is they're organizations that are built on principles and policies. Corporations, I mean, all of the, you know, private businesses, so on and so forth, they're organized around principles as well. Most commonly, two principles. Any guesses what they are?
Profit.
That's one.
With impunity?
There's one other. And I'm glad you're here from Oakland, because Arismendi is one of the reasons is I love them is how they deal with the other major principle in our economy.
Is it growth?
Yeah.
So in our general economy, there's two principles that businesses are measured against, right? Are they profitable and are they growing? And if either one of those isn't happening, they're not considered a successful business, right? So those are the two general principles that businesses are built on. Cooperatives are built on principles as well as policies, but they oftentimes have nothing to do with profit. They oftentimes have nothing to do with growth. Unless it's about limiting growth, unless it's about how you grow, about growing carefully. But the most basic are seven cooperative principles. Is everybody familiar with the seven principles or heard of them? So these are seven principles. Has everybody heard of the Rochdale Pioneers, Rockdale Pioneers? I believe that's actually how it should be pronounced. They were in Rochdale, or Rochdale is how most people here pronounce England, back in the 1848, they started organizing. They came up with seven principles that were known as the Rochdale principles. These are essentially the same as the Rochdale principles. Can I hold this?
Keep trying.
It's not going to stay. All right, concern for the community is down there at the bottom. That's an important one.
Exactly.
That's a very important one. So you can't see it down there, but we're going to go back to concern for community here a bit through this workshop. These are the Rochdale principles have now been basically like slightly reworded, and now we call them the International Cooperative Principles, the ICA, the International Cooperative
Association,
I believe. These are now seven dedicated principles that all cooperatives around the world, if they form and operate according to the International Cooperative Association's definitions of cooperatives, these are the seven most basic principles that they will all operate by. So So you can go to any cooperative all over the world, and most likely these are going to be somewhere in that cooperative on their walls, in their policies, somewhere giving them basic direction about how to run their cooperative. So voluntary and open membership. Cooperatives are open to everybody. If they aren't open to everybody, they're not operating according to these principles. Lots of stuff going on in the Capitol. Union Cab last year took part, or when the protests were going on at the Capitol over the labor bill cutting off unions, the Union Cab participated in those protests. We drove cabs in parades. We drove 40 cabs up and down State Street around the Capitol. It was like really exciting. When it came to a recall, right, Union Cab all of a sudden had an internal debate. Do we publicly support a recall election as a cab cooperative, right? We supported this labor protest, but do we support the recall of a politician? And as a cooperative, we had to decide that we couldn't openly support a recall of a politician, because once we do that, we're taking a stance on politics, which means that we're creating a not open membership. We're creating a line that creates discomfort for one political party and creates great comfort for another political party. So open membership, one of the common ways this is coming up these days is do cooperatives take political stances? It's been debated as long as cooperatives have been around, and now cooperatives have basically decided that cooperatives need to be politically neutral. Because once you're not politically neutral, you're not actually open to everybody. Everybody doesn't feel comfortable being part of your cooperative. Religion, race, all anything else, open membership. It has to be open if it exists as a cooperative. Democratic member control. This is one that really, one number one vote, right? Corporations, why are they able to do what they are able to do? Because a small group of people can own the majority of the organization and direct it, right? They don't have to be where it exists, they don't have to ever look at it, but all they need is money, right? You buy a bunch of shares and you have a controlling stake. Nobody can do that in a cooperative because it's one member, one vote. Everybody owns one share. So no matter how important you are, no matter how much money you have, no matter how little money you have, no matter whether you're the general manager or whether you're the person cleaning the toilets, you have the exact same say over the cooperative as everybody else. So democratic member control is one of the most basic fundamental parts of cooperatives. Member economic participation, the owners participate both in equity, putting their money into the cooperative, as well as receiving money back from the cooperative. Autonomy and independence. Cooperatives can't be run by people who don't live there, by people who don't use it, by people who have no stake in that cooperative, right? I can't, as a cooperative, if we sign a contract with some organization giving them control over Union Cab, in any way, we're no longer autonomous and independent. Our membership no longer has control over the cooperative. Each one member with one vote no longer has total control over their cooperative. There's some external organization now that's driving it.
What's your definition of a member? What is a member?
That's a good question. Well, so a member is, in a cooperative world, is just an owner of a cooperative. So whether it's a grocery cooperative, whether it's a worker cooperative, whether it's a multi-stakeholder cooperative, the most basic idea is that the member is an owner and they are served by the cooperative. So
there was a very high-profile strike among beet sugar workers in northwest Minnesota. Uh-huh. And the employer was the cooperative of sugar beet farmers, and
right.
They went in, yeah, and took away quite a bit of the benefits and stuff. It doesn't seem compatible with the typical cooperative.
Well, so your questions line up great here, because what happens is a member is an owner of a cooperative. So the cooperative is the farming cooperative, right?
Yeah.
The member of the farming cooperative is each individual farm,
yeah,
that is a part of the cooperative. It has nothing to do with the workers on the farm, right? So the interests of that cooperative, the workers are not, if they're, unless the farm owners create principles for their cooperative that says our workers are important, and the health and well-being of our workers is of importance, and we will make sure they make a living wage. That cooperative has nothing to do with those workers. They're serving the farms. So you have cooperative businesses, but you have a bunch of workers who aren't cooperative owners. So they have no say over their pay, they have no say over their benefits, the cooperative businesses. So that's why worker cooperatives, that's one reason why I concentrate on worker cooperatives, and by working through worker cooperatives, starting to work with other cooperatives, because cooperatives can share principles, right? So as we grow an economic economy and we have more, say, worker cooperatives who have at their core principles of worker rights, principles of pay, good pay, living wages, of healthy workplaces, and then we start growing that part of the economy and connecting with these other cooperatives. People have talked about credit unions over time as not taking really good care of their employees. People have talked about farming as it's all over the place, right? Grocery cooperatives, some of them are good, some of them aren't, right? It all depends on what their principles are. But as more cooperatives grow, where workers are at the core of their principles, you start to insert more influence on the other cooperative sectors. And hopefully those farming, the sugar beet cooperative in the future, because of all this other pressure from the larger cooperative community, we'll go, well, we gotta start thinking about this.
One of the reasons that those cooperatives are not filling the needs of those sugar beet workers, cutting your wages, et cetera, is because these cooperatives have to compete on an international capitalist market for their goods.
Yes.
So they're just like, they might be owned by more people than one owner, but they're still under the same compulsions, the same drives that derive any corporation in America, any business in America. And so the labor of those farm workers is considered as a commodity to be as part of production. And that's the problem.
Well, it's definitely, it would be totally a mess to say that's not a problem. I mean, it's a huge problem that cooperatives have. We are trying to grow a cooperative economy and a corporate culture, which is very difficult. Most of the times, because cooperatives don't have, in general, right, union cab has a pay ratio difference between highest and lowest of 2-1. The monitoring cooperatives in Spain, which are the largest cooperative economy in the world, has an average of 5-1. The highest is 9-1. Your major corporations, right, your CEOs of large corporations are regularly, we're looking at like 350-1, and with extremes being like thousands and more over one, right? So when you're talking about cooperative structures, because they're cooperatives, there's a lot of money that cooperatives can play with to spread out instead of just putting them into these few hands. So you're right that sugar beet corporation or cooperative is dealing in a global economy. They're dealing in a subsidized economy. They're dealing in a very difficult economy as it is from the start. But I don't think it's fair to say that's their only problem. I mean, most cooperatives that are not taking care of workers, not taking care of this or that, are making the decision to spend that money somewhere else. But they're putting it somewhere. So it is true. But
aren't they giving that back as benefits to the members of the cooperative?
Right. Right.
And it's not going to the workers. That's the problem.
Right. So those farms are getting any dividends. If there's any, I mean, farming is not very profitable, right?
Well, whatever. Let's say they are.
Let's say they are, right. So each farm is getting a dividend,
right,
where they could decide, well, instead of...
So it's an investment for themselves,
right,
as a co-op. To join the co-op is an investment.
Correct.
They expect a dividend back.
Yes, and we're going to get to that, because that's a major, because about principles, right? When we're talking about organizations, cooperative organizations built on principles, the profit drive is really, when you get down to it, in my opinion, and I think it's a pretty well-accepted opinion, as well as seeing other economies in the world that are doing it differently, that principle, that I own a cooperative because I want a dividend, is a major, major killer for cooperative economy growth. Like, we as individuals are still participating in cooperatives with a corporate mindset. I'm an investor. My investment is here for profit. So at the end of the year, my successful business puts money in my pocket. But if we look at successful cooperative economies in the world, Spain and Italy are the two largest and fastest growing right now. And they deal with that with a social, because social consciousness is different. They look at long-term investments, right? So if I take my profits this year, and you give me 10% of it, but you take 90% of it, and you reinvest it back into the cooperative economy. You put part of that money into a cooperative development fund. You put part of that money into a retirement benefits fund. You put part of that into a healthcare fund. You put that into an unemployment fund. And all the workers of all the cooperatives and the monitoring cooperatives give parts of their profit, a large part of their profit, every year into these investment funds. You have business growing from one business in 1952 or 1948, right around 1950, one business to over 100 cooperative businesses right now that employ over 100,000 cooperative owners and over 120,000 people altogether with their non-member owners that are also working. Italy, the government has created a law that says that as owners of their cooperative, if you sell your cooperative, right? If you decide to dissolve a cooperative, whatever profits are made out of that cooperative will go back into a cooperative development fund. If you sell your cooperative, you don't get any of the assets remaining after paying off your debts. Any money left over goes back into a cooperative development fund so that you aren't taking money out of this cooperative economy if they're getting it going. So that we keep growing. That's national law. So other countries that are successfully growing at a very, very rapid rate, cooperative economies, they don't think about profits as mine. They think about it as, let's reinvest it, and when I'm old, I'm going to get this back. When I'm sick, I'm going to get this back. When business goes down and I have to be laid off for a year, I'm going to get this back. And everybody gets some.
Well, I was going to question, maybe that happens in Italy and Spain, maybe because in America we haven't suffered the amount of poverty that comes from capitalism. We're getting there. And it could be that they've had it for a while to deal with and we're getting there. And this might be a cause for these cooperatives to really think very seriously about how they're sharing their wealth.
I think we could learn a lot from Europe. I mean, any place that's been around on the world longer than us, right, is probably a good place to look for lessons. And so, I mean, people have been doing this in Europe and trying to figure it out for hundreds of years before we existed, and they've got a jump on us, you know.
This might not be the point to raise this issue, but you mentioned Europe and Italy and Spain, so I thought I'd raise it now. I've been reading Richard Wolff, who is, believe it or not, a left-wing economist, University of Massachusetts, and it's got a recent book which presents an alternative to capitalism. And his mechanism is what he calls a worker self-directed enterprise, which you can go down and look up. And he points out that this sounds a lot like a cooperative, but it's not quite cooperative. And the chief difference, well, he posed this as the chief difference between his system and capitalism is that the workers are the ones who determine the disposition of the surplus produced by the workers. The workers decide who's going to get what in the way of a surplus, not a board of directors. The workers do that. The ones who are running the factories, doing the assembly line stuff, day-to-day work, they're the ones who do that. Mm-hmm. How is this different? How does this differ from a cooperative? He's at pains to point out that this is not the same thing as a cooperative.
Well,
and it works in Spain, it works in Italy. Mondragon is very successful, 85,000 workers involved in
that. But he says Mondragon is not a cooperative?
Oh, no, he says it's not a cooperative. He says Mondragon is an example of a worker self-directed enterprise.
But I think he calls them all, in a general way, cooperatives, but that they are different sorts of cooperatives.
Right. Well, Mondragon is a collection of worker cooperatives. They have a cooperative bank. They're definitely cooperative.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I've read Richard Wolff too, and I think he's trying to say that because cooperative is such a general business, you know, it's basically just a way to organize a business. Right. It says nothing about whether the workers have a say or not, like John was saying. So he wants to make sure that when he says worker self-directed enterprises, he means if he does say cooperative, it has to be a worker cooperative. It can't just be a consumer.
Right.
I don't see any such principle listed here.
No. So those are the seven principles. And the reason why those are the international principles is because those apply to any cooperative. They have nothing to do to say who the members are. But each cooperative will determine by what the business is, what you're doing, who the actual owners are going to be. So each cooperative determines that. But those seven principles just say, if you're going to form a cooperative and you want to be an international cooperative considered in this world, these seven principles, with don't forget concern for communities down there headed, these seven principles will be adhered to. So we aren't going to say who your members are, whether they're workers, whether they're homeowners, whether they're farmers, whether they're anything. But each one has to have one vote and only one vote. Each one has to participate economically in that cooperative, both with putting their equity, putting their money into it, as well as being able to get money back from the cooperative.
Is an ESOP a cooperative?
No.
And how does it differ?
An ESOP, let me rephrase that. An ESOP could operate like a cooperative.
It's not necessarily a cooperative.
It is not by law a cooperative because an ESOP is an actual tax law, right? That's an actual, that is a business status. You are an ESOP, so you're not by law a cooperative. But you can operate as a cooperative. I don't know any ESOPs that operate as cooperatives. And ESOPs are great about using worker-owned, 100% worker-owned as marketing, right? You drive down the road now and you see that, you're like, all right, I'm going in there, man. Those workers own it, right? This place is awesome, right? They don't have anything to say about it.
It's worker-owned, but not self-directed.
Right. What it is the ESOP.
It's a sharing of the profits.
Yeah, right. But I don't want to get into ESOPs. ESOPs are not. They can operate as cooperatives. I don't know any that do. They could operate in a democratic manner that was absolutely beautiful, but because that's not really why ESOPs are around, that's not how they operate. Other principles that not all cooperatives have these, but when people start walking through the process of developing a cooperative, your vision and your mission statement are where you generally start, right? Those are the basic principles of your cooperative business that the group of you, this is the big your, right? When I say your, I'm not talking about each one of you, I'm talking about you and the other people that run the cooperative with you, right? The vision and the mission statement are something that you'll come up with right off the start, and those are a fundamental thing that will run your cooperative. This is a vision statement from Union Cap. So our vision is to serve the community in such a way that we are recognized as a sustainable asset and valued resource by all. Remember the seventh cooperative principle, concern for community? Do you notice anything about cabs in there? Transportation? Nothing, right? Our vision has nothing to do with how we bring in money. Our vision has to do with what we want to be seen as in this community. We want to be a valuable asset. We want our business to be run in a way that is valuable in this community, that the community wants us to be here. That they'll be bummed if we shut down. That they'll be bummed if we sell out and leave, right? Our mission statement, we bring in transportation, right? So our mission is to create jobs, a living wage, a better, and a safe, humane, and democratic environment by providing quality transportation services. We recognize in our mission, we're going to do this by selling people cab rides, right? But what are we really doing by selling those cab rides? What are we actually producing at our cooperative? We're not producing food. We're not producing cab rides. We're not producing cabs. We're producing jobs at a living wage for better in a safe, humane environment. This is the fundamental difference of worker cooperatives on any other cooperative, right? And a cooperative, it doesn't matter what you sell, it doesn't matter what you make, it doesn't matter what widget you are in the business of dealing with, right? Your product, your service in a worker cooperative is the job. That's what you're producing in a worker cooperative. You choose whatever business you're going to run to create those jobs. But our mission is not to provide cab service. Our mission is to create jobs by running a cab company. Very, very, very different, right?
So what I hear you saying is that you're actually producing an experience?
We call it a social experiment.
In addition to the experience, you also produce a destination. Like in corporate terms, like a lot of stuff I work on is translation from like corporate world into high-tech culture. And the buzzwords are experience. People want to go somewhere where they have an experience. And I think by the fact that your cab drivers, as you shared, are highly conversational on a different level is an experience in and of itself. Yeah. And then the bonus is that it's also a destination, meaning that people, if you can just walk with me on this, view your cab or the opportunity to reach out to your cab as a destination to experience. So you become part of the cultural fabric of Madison.
Yes, which again is why it's the concern for the community.
Did I explain that? That's
the whole cycle. So when you go back to like working with, so Union Cab is one business within this community, right? And we provide an experience for the community. And we provide an experiment for our workers. But by then connecting with other cooperatives, by developing this cooperative economy, we're creating businesses that are anchored to the Madison area that are both experiments for the owners of that business, but a continuing experience for the entire community. And everybody, it becomes a thriving local economy as it goes, right? So, and just wanted to put this out there too. So another principle of the member control, right? Cooperatives are ideal anchor businesses in local economies because they are owned by the people who use them, right? Nobody can come and offer the CEO of Wheelie Street Co-op, you know, $10 million for the business and have the CEO sign off on that, right? It's not just a small board of directors that's owned by a small group of investors that make that decision, right? Everybody is an owner of a cooperative, an equal owner of a cooperative. And depending upon what you put in your bylaws about the solution of a cooperative, you may require every single person in the cooperative to vote yes before you can sell your cooperative off, right? You might require 75%, right? But you can't just sell off a cooperative and have it outsourced to some other country. You can't just get to a certain size and have your competition come and go, whoa, you guys are a little too much competition. We're just going to buy you up. We'll give you a lot of money for it, right? Everybody has to decide to do that. So cooperatives become anchor businesses in local economies because they can't be sold off to the highest bidder, like by a small group of investors who have only invested in that business to get a return. So really, when you think about investors, right, they want the business to grow, right? Two basic principles. And they want it to grow because eventually it's going to get sold off because that's where they're really going to get good dividends. And so the entire model is built on, like, not creating anchor businesses in local economies. The entire model of our system is built on globalization, right?
Have you had conflicts between keeping the business going with competition with other cab companies versus your community experience?
No. We haven't had real competition issues. We have economic ups and downs. The cab market is very low profit margin. You know, you're looking at a good year in a cab market, and you're looking at 2-3% profits. So, you know, it's a business that we deal with regular economic fluctuations, but because we have successfully lived up to our vision of being a valued asset in this community. People in Madison want us here. People in Madison support us. We survive because we have a major core group of businesses and individuals who will not use anybody else, right?
Mm-hmm. So you do have a surplus, small surplus. How is that surplus distributed?
For us, every cooperative determines in their bylaws how that surplus is distributed. So can we get back to that question
sure.
a little bit? But yeah, so in cooperative bylaws, we deal with that. Now, in Wisconsin, we actually have state law that directs how, that gives direction to cooperatives. So we have to, our bylaws have to adhere to those state laws. Some states don't have cooperative laws, so you'll get people running cooperatives, but they're legally organized as a limited liability corporation, or that you can make a B corporation and run it as a cooperative. You can make a C corporation and run it as a cooperative. You can make any business and run it as a cooperative as long as you have bylaws. A lot of states that don't have cooperative law, they'll have a business structure that requires that organization and bylaws. That's a great, if you at least have that as a legal structure in your state, it's good because those bylaws get voted on and that gives you some actual legal foundation. If you don't have that in a code, you don't really have the state backing your organization up, and you only have the strength of your organization to actually keep it as a cooperative. But people do it all the time. These are our core values at Union Cab. These have grown over our 34-year history. The last one at the bottom, we're dedicated to operating our business in an environmentally responsible way. We added just like 5 years ago, I think, 4 years ago. But as an organization, we debated that for years, right? And finally, I mean, we're a cab company, right?
Sure.
How environmental can we be, right? It's kind of like, but when I started working there, we had old cars. We had Caprices with 400,000 miles on. I mean, are we dripping oil in the parking lot, dripping coolant in the parking lot? Like, not. I mean, people really valued us, but if we, as I look at our business, I'm like, wow, people do value us, but they don't necessarily know what we're dropping on the ground over here, right? But now, 12 years later, we have this as a core value. We have a 3-year rotation on certain cars. We just switched out our entire sedan fleet last year to the Priuses. Our cabs don't leak stuff all over our parking lots. We've created a parking lot we got it poured so that what does drop on a parking lot is trapped in the asphalt. We're trying now to operate in an environmental way. This is something that as an organization, as a cooperative, we decided by our membership to put that in there. Doesn't help with our profits, right? And sometimes it's hard to live up to that economically. In a bad year, it's tough. But as an organization, if we're going to live by our principles and be that valued asset in the community, that's something we have to do.
But in reality, you don't really have to make a profit 2 or 3%.
No.
Because if you make wages, if you make your employee, you're a cooperative person.
We will not have investors that shut us down because we've turned a 0.2% profit for 10 years straight, or we've only turned a profit for 3 out of the last 5 years. If our workers are willing to take pay cuts, if our owners are willing to take pay cuts when it's a bad year, we stay open. If it's so bad that we can't even do it with pay cuts, we're going to have a big problem. But, we deal with it.
I noticed that in the 7 principles and in these documents, the word ownership is never mentioned. Why is that?
I don't know. I generally like to talk about it as member owners.
Especially in the 7 principles, it kind of strikes me that that isn't included.
Well, and those are just the titles of. If you go on,
paragraph about each or more.
Yeah, there's more text that goes along with each of those as an explanation. Like if you go to the ICA's website, they'll have those. And so ownership is. I can't remember all of it, but
yeah. Anyway, I just kind of surprised.
So cooperatives are organizations built on principles and policies, right? We have cooperative policies in the form of cooperative law, legislation passed by states. Each cooperative has articles of incorporation. They're an official business. They've filed with a state. They're basic fundamentals about their business. They're bylaws. Cooperatives have bylaws. These are policies passed by the entire membership, not by board of directors, by the membership, that gives the basic direction to the cooperative. It talks about patronage refunds. When you have a profit, how do you distribute it? How much can you keep for the cooperative? You generally set up your board of directors elections. You talk about what your board will be, how many people will be on it, how will it operate. What notice will it give to your membership? The most basic, fundamental, like governing principles of your organization are going to be in your bylaws. Rules about dissolving the cooperative are going to be there. Major policies. And then we have cooperative policy, which are more of the day-to-day things, right? Conflict resolution is the most common problem in cooperatives, in worker cooperatives, right? You got all these people working there that own it. Now they got work together and own it, right? And boy, it's tough, right? Because you can't just fire that guy because he actually owns it. You can't fire her because she actually owns it. But they're like ready to go at it in the parking lot, tear each other's heads off, right? How do you deal with it?
Welcome to democracy.
Right?
Exactly.
So you have cooperative policies for each cooperative business that gives directions to how you deal with things, how you deal with conflict resolution. You'll put your pay raise in your policy. You'll put things that aren't like the big picture, like skeleton, the constitution of your cooperative, but that tell you how to deal with stuff, right? Any problems that come up, you end up creating cooperative policy for it. So then, cooperatives are organized, right? They have boards of directors. As a cooperative, you have to make a decision. How are we going to run, right? How are we going to vote? Occupy. You guys, do you still do consensus?
Well, it depends on how you
want to
look at that.
Okay. Well, there's consensus, there's modified consensus, there's throw it out the window, let's do majority,
There's patriarchal rule.
Well, there's patriarchal rule all over the place for centuries and centuries and centuries.
We believe in democracy, one vote, one man. One vote, rather than a consensus. One person, one vote.
Well, so your board of directors in a cooperative. You can, Union Cab has 230-some-odd members. We have a 9-person board with 3 alternates. So those 9 people represent the entire membership.
Is that because there's so many people in your membership? Is that where you have representative versus direct?
Yes. So what you'll generally see is that smaller cooperatives would have a direct democracy, right? I am the board of director. Mad work. When we meet, everybody that comes to that meeting from a different cooperative is for that evening a director of the cooperative. So when you have smaller groups, which we'll do some activities talking about starting up small-scale cooperatives, generally you start with direct. Everybody sitting at the table is a director. You're just going to make that decision. As you grow, you're going to start to run into issues, right? How are we going to deal with our board now? All of a sudden, we're 30 members. Are we all going to be board members still? Are we all going to sit together and make these decisions together? If we do it, are we going to do it through majority? Are we going to do it through consensus? Are we going to do it through modified consensus? Isthmus Engineering is a great cooperative here in town. They have, right now, 30 member owners. They have few more employees, and then I think they have like 50 total people that work there. 30 of them are owners, but they're all board members. They have, and the board, the meetings are fascinating. I love them. They're just great.
That'd be crazy.
You have management, right? You got a business. I got a business. How are we going to make this thing work, right? We got all these people here in the democracy. We got all these. We got a board. This is awesome, right? But we got to bring in some money somehow, right? So how are we going to run this cooperative, right? Are we going to have a traditional management set up? Union Cab right now is in the process of flattening out a very traditional hierarchical management position, right? We are starting to implement team structures. So most of what you see is you either see up and down, top down setups, or you see these team structures. So a very basic like cooperative structure. Right? And this exists for any cooperative, consumer, worker, whatever. Right? If you have member owners of the cooperative, those member owners elect a board of directors, and that board of directors oversees the management of the cooperative. This is a grocery cooperative. This is the basic structure of almost any consumer grocery cooperative.
Are these people subject to recall or instant recall or any kind of recall process?
Yes,
they don't represent?
You will put that in. Yes, every cooperative has, well, I shouldn't say every cooperative. Any cooperative that's been directed by somebody that has been helping them wisely will have recall of directors put in their bylaws. And that's something that is in bylaws, because it requires the membership to change that.
you don't want your board of directors to be able to make a policy on recall of directors, right?
Right.
So any cooperative that's got a solid foundation in their bylaws, they'll have rules for recall of directors. A worker cooperative structure is just a little bit different. We put members down at the bottom, right? If we're in a, this was what Union Cat structure was for basically all of our existence up until last year. So our membership elected our board of directors directed management, and management directed each individual member, right? Right, each individual member is doing the work, right? So management is directing each individual member. But each individual member together makes the membership, right? No power is one member, but as a membership, you oversee the cooperative and run the cooperative. But you also have situation. So let me just skip this one. So this is what we've got now at Union Cat. We have a membership that elects a board of directors, and that the board of directors oversees management teams. So management teams are now working on consensus. Each team is a consensus group. All of those teams work together through one coordinating team, and they're all overseen by the board of directors.
Do they have they're equal? All the team members are owners?
They are all owners, yes. That's why, so I did want to do that. That's why, so the difference between these two, since you asked that. So in this situation, right, you've got a membership, you've got a board of directors. The management here doesn't necessarily have to be a member, right? We can hire a general manager and say, well, you can't be a member. We can say all managers aren't members. We'll tell you what to do, but we're not going to give you a vote because you're the manager, right? So in this next slide, this is actually more like Union Cat because everybody is a member of Union Cat. So your board of directors, each one of them is a member. All of your managers are directors. Everybody is a member. We do have limits on our general manager or business manager can't be a director.
Do you ever find that technical expertise warps that relationship between the membership and management?
What do you mean?
Well, something, you know, it's, you can drive a cab, but coming in and managing, say, fuel contracts and things of that nature, that can be quite difficult. Does that ever then skew power to a group not intended to have that?
Well, that's a great question. So, a successful business has succession plans, right? So what you're really talking about is the difficulties that arise when you have an organization where people get really specialized, right? I'm a cab driver. You're the manager. You buy fuel. You buy insurance. I don't know how to do that, right? I have no idea how to do that. Cooperatives, if you go back to the cooperative principles, one of them is education, right? Education of your membership. Not just in anything, right, to make you a more enlightened person, a more happy and healthy person, but also specifically in your business. If you have a cooperative that's running successfully, you're creating education opportunities for your members in any other aspect of the work that they choose to learn how to do.
It's sort of like cross-training.
Yes.
And it's also going to ask you in relationship to this, do you have job rotation?
Well, we don't even have it. Some do.
Well, you so some the members can fulfill all of these functions, right. And you can vote them out, recall
yep.
them. And
so we were in the process of organizing a cooperative restaurant, and that was one of the principles that we built into the cooperative restaurant. It's not, it didn't get started. We got into the process. But one of the principles we built in was that at least one day out of the week, everybody rotates. Or you're on dishes for this week, and then next week you're the front end manager. But so some cooperatives do that. At Union Cab, I'm a cab driver, I'm a shop mechanic, I'm starting back in the shop in a week. I've been a phone answer, dispatcher, board of director. Union Cab is great. I've learned, when I started there, I had no idea what how to read a financial sheet. I mean, I'm really good at math, I did physics in college, but now I'm a business owner, right? I sat on our director on the board. I know how to do financial sheets. I know how to like look at our organization now from an actual business standpoint and go, oh, yeah, we're in really good shape, or whoa, there's a problem here, you know? Who do I need to talk to about this? And then this is another situation that occurs. This is Isthmus Engineering, what I talked about, right? Their membership is their board of directors, right? Every member is a board member. And all of their management teams are made up of their entire membership. If you take their general manager out of there, this is Isthmus Engineering, right? But so one of the, at a board meeting, right, all of them are owners, but each one is assembled in their teams, right? So engineering team one that's working on project X is over here. Marketing team is over here. Whoever else is, they have their other teams. And at the board meeting, each team reports. They rotate the facilitation and the chair of each team, their consensus, I think their consensus. And so they report to the board. If they need the board to make a decision, that team puts forward a proposal to the board. The entire membership is the board, and they make decisions right there. It's lots of people think of it as inefficient, but oftentimes what I've seen is it's a very efficient system. And it's the most inclusive system, right? It's the most transparent system because everybody is a director. Everybody's looking at the financial sheets. Everybody's looking at each team's reports. Everybody has in front of them all the time all the information about the entire cooperative, right? Isn't that crazy? Think about going to a business and you're like, you're person cleaning the bathrooms, and you're like, gotta see what's going on here.
How about a quality of wages? In other words, does the cab driver get less than the manager? Or how?
Like I said, union cab is 2-1, is our pay ratio from highest to lowest. Our board of directors sets pay, when we hire a new position, we have to hire a new IT position. We create a job description for it. The board, whoever's creating it, sends that job description with a proposed pay range to the board, and the board approves it or changes it.
This is a little off, but I've been thinking for a while that the United States is just too big to work. And we need to start breaking down into maybe bioregions or something. And I'm wondering if you thought about applying any of the various co-op models to government.
I have.
I'm so glad I asked that question.
I have. To be honest, I don't want to get into that right now, but because I want to get into the process of starting up a cooperative, and we're down to about half an hour. But what I would say is you can do the exact same thing that I do, and that's as you learn about cooperative structures, think about your government as a cooperative. Think about your public school system as a cooperative. Because in reality, they're this close. They are this close, right? They aren't thought of as cooperatives, but if you think about they don't have the cooperative principles, just from the governance, just from the ownership, right? We own our public schools. We each elect the people who run them. We own, as the people in Madison, every car that the municipality owns, right? We as taxpayers here typically are the owners, right? We hire and elect somebody to run this municipality. So they're close. They're close. Government and cooperatives. And like, that's why I
look at property owners and...
You mean when you have workers that are owners?
Yes.
Yes. It does cause a problem. There's a yellow cab co-op in Milwaukee. They're organized as a Chapter 185. They're a legal Wisconsin cooperative. They have five owners of the cab cooperative.
They're not taking this part.
They are a cooperative, but they don't operate as a cooperative.
But the whole point, it seems to be, if you're talking about democracy, the whole thing is to eliminate property owners and non-property owners, because that's the biggest problem with capitalism.
Well, yeah, now if you're talking about property owners, yeah, that's the whole, yeah. I mean, I believe the whole problem with our entire system at the root of it is property ownership. As a cooperative, the idea is to essentially eliminate individual ownership, right? As an owner of the cooperative, I own, if I was 200 members, I own 1/200th of this desk, but I own 1/200th of every desk, right? So
cooperatives are working to eliminate that singular. The business still owns it, right? But not the individuals. But some cooperatives don't operate as cooperatives, which is why it's important to learn and grow cooperatives with good principles, because the cooperatives that are operating not based on good democratic principles, that either we can expose them like Yellow Cab Co-op, don't ever get into them, and think that you're supporting a healthy co-op, right? Farming cooperatives are notorious for some farming cooperatives that are just, they're huge, they don't serve their members well, they're like the sugar beet people, you know, we've got sugar beet owners that don't actually care about the workers because they're not owners. They probably should care about the workers, you know, it's not very cooperative. We're running out of time, so we're going to breeze to, we've got half an hour to go over starting a worker cooperative.
Yeah. Maybe you answer this later. Why would the state be involved or interested in recognizing cooperatives in any kind of a legal?
Well, for Wisconsin, it's, we have the oldest law in the country. I mean, why? Mm-hmm. I believe it's probably because we had a bunch of producer cooperatives that were starting to organize, and I mean, I imagine it's like anything else. If you have enough money and you have enough influence, you go to your legislators and say, we need this, they'll pass it, right? I mean, cooperative law is great. I want my state to pass a cooperative law because that gives my cooperative a legal foundation. If we run a cooperative in, say, a state that doesn't have cooperative law, but we run it like a cooperative, at any point in time, that can be scuttled. Right? Even though we've said we're going to operate, we don't actually have the backing of the state to do it. Now, that's, like I say, some states have within their tax laws, like business setups that you couldn't just do that with. But if you don't...
Why would any state want to schedule it? I mean, what difference does it make?
What's that?
What would be the... What, you said if they didn't have a cooperative law, they could state could schedule it. Why would they ever do that? What would be the
who?
Reason to do that?
Why
for a state to say, well, we can't have co-ops?
I don't think that it's a matter of states saying we can't have co-ops. I think it's more of a state that it's never been brought up in that state.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of states that have co-ops.
I can speak to, like, there's a national act that exempts cooperatives from monopoly laws, because if you really think about it, when farmers band together to set prices, you're basically fixing the price of your good.
Yeah.
But they, so it really helps to be then, the state backs you up under the cooperative law, which makes you legally then exempt from other things.
So it's a carve-out.
No. And it's also nice because in Wisconsin, you cannot use the term cooperative unless you're legally registered as one. So
right.
People can't just fake it. You can't just open up a business and say, hey, we're
a
grocery
co-op.
And they're like, oh, okay.
Right. So like Woodman's or other like people, ESOP's doing this 100%. Like Wisconsin didn't have that, right? Any business could then throw a cooperative on there. And in this movement that we've got right now where people are paying attention and they want to put their money into cooperatives, all
it's,
of a sudden
it's actually interesting. You can't say you're cooperative if you're not one. If you are cooperative, you have to
you
say
have
you're
to
a
say
cooperative.
You're cooperative.
So
right.
Anytime you see the term cooperative, you're like, you have to be.
Do you think then, I don't know if you know this, do you think then that the cooperative laws throughout the states, they were sort of backed with this in mind to protect co-ops? Because it seems to me that it's against the capitalist system to be interested in cooperatives.
And that's why we in Minnesota have strong laws, because we have such a rich history here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got the cooperative network. I think it's the only state, it's sort of Minnesota and Wisconsin, so it's not just one state, but I'm pretty sure they're the only local cooperative body that deals solely with cooperative state legislation.
What is Walker's, Governor Walker's attitude about these kind of codes? He want to break these
codes? Yeah, honestly,
I
hope he doesn't even know about it.
Paul Ryan thinks it.
I hope not. I mean, my hope is that, because of what was just brought up, cooperatives are flying under the radar right now. They are totally in opposition. They're not totally in opposition. The new movement, like the worker cooperative sector in this country, has really been flourishing again in the last 10 years. Because worker cooperatives are owned and run by the members, they tend to be a much more active cooperative with the cooperative development work. For
trying to like create, you have a more active sector. So the worker cooperatives have really been growing again in the last 10 years, first time since like the 70s. And so you're seeing this new resurgence in cooperative growth in the country, and specifically in worker cooperatives. If that continues, I believe we're going to start having to pay attention to Washington. We're going to have to really have a national lobbying body to help protect our interests. Because, yeah, a couple of laws get passed that if they pull that monopoly exemption, I mean, that could cause a major problem. So I really hope politicians right now unless they have something I need from them, I'd rather them not know.
We won't tell. Stir up the beehive there.
So, starting off the worker cooperatives. So, there's all different types of cooperatives, all different size cooperatives. What I'm going to focus on right now is just a really small group, right? But a small startup, small capital type of startup cooperative, right? There's services out there that if you have a business, right, that you want to turn into a cooperative, there's paid professionals out there that can help you do that. But the real mobilization right now that I want to focus on is how do you get people, everyday people, whoever they are, make money and cooperate in a small cooperative business that can grow. Right?
Is this online?
This? No, not yet, but I can put it online. Yeah.
Would you?
I will. Okay. Yeah, you'll get my email at the end, too, so you can, you'll be able to talk to me, and you can go and get it off the website. So, the first thing in starting a cooperation is facilitation. Right? Cooperation. If we can't talk, with each other, if we can't listen to each other, then we're not going to cooperate together, right? So, facilitation. The other reason why this is so important, think of right off the bat, right? I get people working with Madison Worker Cooperatives that come to us with like great ideas. They're like, I want to start this cooperative, and I'm so excited. I'm like, that's a great idea. Who's going to work on it with you? Right? Because you're one. They're like, oh, well, I was just going to do this and then find some people that want to do it. And it's like, okay, you might succeed. If you really nail it, you might be able to find some people. But you've just created a business all by yourself, right? It's not a cooperative. Why not just go start it by yourself? Like, if you want to cooperate, the first part of it is finding a group of people to work with and being able to communicate with those people. So, a little activity. You guys, how about, we got a few people. You guys want to, why don't we do you four. Oh, that's perfect. Then I can do three and four. You guys want to kind of come together each in these rows?
Okay.
Squeeze together.
That's four.
Yeah, you four, and then you guys can split it either way. You can be on this three or this.
Yeah.
So, if you're going to form a cooperative,
Jim.
One of the problems with starting these little cooperatives is most of the time we're all employed, right? We all have jobs. We're already working full-time to like support ourselves in this tough economy, right? So when the heck are we going to find time to work together to start a cooperative, right? How long is it going to take us? How often can we meet, right? So each of you guys, what I want you, each group to do is to pick one person. One person volunteer, or you can do it. You can nominate somebody. You want one person to be the chairperson of each of your groups, and then that person will be responsible for making sure everybody talks and gets to make a schedule. So I want each of you guys to pick a facilitator in your group, and I want you to come up with a meeting schedule.
Doesn't he look like facilitator?
What times are you guys going to meet, and how often are you going to meet to come up with this plan?
How about Paulie? Do you want to do facilitator?
What did you?
I know.
Is that too
easy?
You know, that's how it works. He was like, no.
What I want everybody to do as well, this is real life, right? You each have jobs. So I want you to, this is your real schedule. This is your real life. So I want you all to figure out, this is what my schedule is right now. We're going to do this.
You said it's real life. I'm in California. He's in New Jersey.
Meet by phone.
We can do it online.
Schedule the conference call.
I work late on Monday through Friday. Anytime on the weekends. Six to anytime. That's why I say at 1 o'clock on Sundays work.
You're a new member.
He's going to join your group.
We're trying to decide. We've got most of the people Sundays at 1 o'clock because I can decide if we can. I'm the one who's more. I don't know how busy we are. That's right. GM has flexibility.
How about every 2 weeks?
Yeah, but Paul, and then,
They have to be people are coming to the same city.
We got a tech.
Right.
So what do you think? We're outside the box here.
How's everybody else? Does it get you meeting time?
Like rent space before the conference is happening.
I think they're ready.
You guys have a hard time all coming up with meeting times?
Piece of cake.
Yeah, good. Oh, that's good. Because, I mean, oftentimes people are so busy, right? You don't have the world.
Okay.
All right. So has everybody successfully got a meeting time?
Yes.
When are you guys meeting?
Saturday morning.
Once a week?
Once a week.
What time?
10 a.m.
Thanks. What about you guys?
Tuesday, 8 p.m., 2nd. Tuesday 8 p.m., 2nd and 4th, and Tuesday each month.
Twice a month. What about you guys?
Weekly Sunday at 1 p.m.
Weekly Sunday. What about you guys back there?
Saturday morning.
Once a week?
Actually, it's Saturday 11 to
12. I have a question for you. What do you do with your co-op members when they tell you they've already got 16-hour-a-day commitments and they sleep 8 hours a day?
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you.
You find new partners.
That's what I'm saying. This is the first thing. Because you're like, okay, what is it? Like, we're going to have to figure this out. We're going to have to be able to dedicate time to this. And if everybody can't stick to it, if we lose, you know, one person, we're going to have to replace them, right? So we have to do this in a sustainable way. We have to be able to keep meeting. We have to be able to keep doing it. We have to figure out how to do it to not burn out. Because, who knows how much you work? Who knows how many kids you got? Who knows whether you're taking care of old parents or not? Who knows? Maybe you got to take a dog out for a walk every other day. So what we're going to work on is a new idea, right, for a cooperative, right? There's basic three types. You got a new idea, I'm going to start a cooperative with my friends, right? You got an incubated idea, where a group creates a cooperative business and then finds people to fill the membership role in that cooperative business. Most of the time, this is done through nonprofits right now. You're from Oakland. Wages. Are you familiar with Wages? They're a nonprofit in the Bay Area that provides cooperative jobs to immigrant females. So, what's that?
Immigrants.
Yeah. It's a nonprofit organization which receives grant funding, and that nonprofit organization then uses those grants to help start up this cooperative. They find people, they recruit people to come in and start the cooperative up with them. And then after 2 years, Wages lets the worker cooperative off on their own. And then that cooperative is an autonomous and independent business. That's the most common thing right now with business incubation. It's nonprofits using grant money to fund businesses for people who are underserved. And then there's conversions. If you're a business owner, if you're a corporation, and you want to sell your business to a cooperative, you don't have to pay any capital gains taxes. So right now we're trying to train people in doing business conversions into cooperatives, as well as starting to make contacts to really start to try to sell that to business owners.
What do you do about capital inequality? When you got a group of four that come together and one person's got a lot of money and another person's got no money,
we're good.
You have startup capital and you have operating deficits.
We're going to get down to that. That's going to come up too anytime you start cooperating, right?
I have a basic problem with this. I've been working on employing, I have a TV program for 20 years now, Employees Today. And the problem is that's what the Soviet Union, the U.S. was about, owners and workers.
Right.
And the thing is, this stuff of having more property owners inside the co-op and whatnot, to me, if it's a real democracy, I consider this a real co-op. Mm-hmm. What I consider a real co-op is one where everybody is equal.
Yes. Yes.
And there's no grunts. There's no grunts, that they're just employees.
Yeah, I mean, that's That's for that work, what we have to do is align a democratic organization as an organization that has 51% of its of the people that work there are owners. Ideally, it's 100%, right? But some cooperatives, like Isthmus Engineering, they're 50 employees, and 30 of them are member owners. Everybody has the option to be a member owner of Isthmus Engineering. But as non-owner employees, they have health benefits. The owners have to pay their own health benefits, but they give employees health benefits. They give their employees a whole list of their benefits.
So the thing is, if you didn't have that situation, everybody was an owner, then you could set up a benefit plan for all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I mean,
yeah.
What's the...
Well, at Isthmus, they said, well, if you buy into this cooperative, you have to come up with $20,000 to buy into the cooperative. You're going to be then an owner of a high profit margin in high-tech business, right? So you're going to get good returns on your investment. We are a successful business, but it's going to cost you $20,000. You're not going to get free health insurance anymore. You're going to be getting a good dividend, and you're going to be responsible for that yourself.
But who determines how much the health benefits you get? I mean, you get full coverage.
The
owners of the business determine.
Yeah, so again, you have a situation where you have people who are going to be have half a health plan, basically.
Well, no. In that situation, the owners have no health plan. But the employees that choose to not be owners have a health plan provided for them by the cooperative. They're not owners of the cooperative. The cooperative has said, you're not getting these big returns on dividends. You're not investing in the cooperative, so you're not getting any of the profits. We're going to pay your health benefits. It's just the exact opposite of the sugar beet situation. You've got employees that are not owners of the cooperative business, but the cooperative business, the owners have made the decision to take very good care of the people that choose to be employees. They don't have to be. They can become members if they want. That is their choice. But if you choose to be an employee of Isthmus Engineering is going to take very good care of you. They will take very good care of you.
Are the 20 happy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they've
chosen to not become members.
Uh-huh. Well, they could have not had 20,000, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but I mean, they're working at Isthmus Engineering. I mean, just your job alone there, you can go take a business loan. You can go get a loan. I mean, you're in a high-paying job.
Well, and also in Montague and Spain, if you don't have the money and you want to become a member owner, they front you. They lend you.
Lots of co-ops, and that's the way the co-ops will do it, right? At Union Cab, we have a $25 token stock purchase. Our members don't actually contribute anything economically from the startup into the cooperative business, except token, or I think it's actually $50. Isthmus Engineering is $20,000. Like, if you've got some money, most cooperatives that require a large buy-in, Arizmendi, I think it's like $1,000. Maybe it's $5,000, but they'll take it out of paychecks, you can pay it off over time. You won't be a voting member in a lot of places until you've paid off your entire stock. But you're working through the cooperative to become that.
By definition, is an employee-owned company a cooperative?
No. No, because there's no, you've not defined what that employee ownership is.
ESOP wouldn't be.
A worker cooperative is owned by its employees. Yeah. Being employee-owned doesn't mean you're a cooperative. Okay. So these are the seven steps. We're just about out of time, so we're just going to do a couple other things. But we're just going to run through these. These are the seven steps to starting up cooperatives. Your data and information. So you all have just decided when you're going to meet. So now you guys are all going to get together at your prescribed times, and you're going to start gathering information. What is our business? What kind of stuff do we need? What's the need to be met? We're going to talk about now, should we be a co-op, right? Is doing this together, forming a co-op, really the best way to serve this need? Or is it best to have just a private, you know, like business, right? Who knows? If we're going to start a cooperative, who are going to be the owners, right? Who's going to own it? And then who are potential collaborators? Who do you all need? Who exists that can help you start or run your cooperative successfully, right? Once you've identified the cooperative's good, you're going to get organized, right? Now, the next thing I was going to have you guys do is come up with some shared principles. But so this, one of the first things you're going to do as a group is you're going to work over your mission and vision. Because what happens in forming cooperatives is you get people that are all excited, right? I want a cooperative. I love this idea. Let's do it. You find five people and you're sitting down at the table. But all of a sudden you realize that the values that each one of you wants it for are different. Maybe they're the same. But so the first thing you're going to do as a group is you're going to talk about why am I as an individual sitting down at this table with you all to form this business together. We're going to talk about our principles, and we're going to try to come up with some core values, a mission statement or a vision statement for our organization that we can all agree on. Because if we can't agree on that, it's a done deal, right? We're not getting anywhere. So the first thing you're going to do is come up with those shared values and principles. You're going to decide how you make communication or decisions. Do we do consensus? Do we do majority? Do we do consensus minus one, modified consensus? Very, very, very important. This is when you decide how you communicate, right? When we make a decision, if you can't come to the meeting, you need to know what was decided at that meeting, right? How are we going to communicate? How are we going to schedule meetings? How much notice do we all want before a meeting can happen? Because the whole idea is democracy, transparency, and participation. So if we aren't notifying everybody when the meeting times are, drives me crazy. I was working with one group, and this one person would just set up a meeting and call five other people and go, here's the meeting. And I'm like, I can't work with you to start up this. You're asking me to help you start up a cooperative, and you're not cooperating. You're not communicating, right? So are we going to need committees? Do we need to have task groups set up to start this business? Like, do we want to set up two people that are going out looking at marketing? Do we want to send two people up that are going to go out and start thinking about our feasibility study? Are we going to send two people to decide to look for sites for our business? Like, do we need to set up different groups taking different parts of this process? So feasibility research, right? This is a part of all startup cooperatives, but the question, first question you need to ask is, we need to know whether this business idea is feasible. How in-depth does a feasibility study actually need to be, right? If you're starting up a grocery cooperative, if you're starting up a business, like a storefront business selling something, you better know what market you're getting into, right? You better have a feasibility study to look at where you're going to put this business to just see, wait, we want to put a bakery in on Willie Street, but there's like six bakeries that just opened up. This is not a feasible idea, right? Do we need to go somewhere else? Right? Maybe Willie Street's not the place.
How often do you, instead of starting from scratch, do you convert an existing business?
I haven't ever done what is thought of as a conversion where the owner is a willing seller to the workers. I've done conversions where the people that were doing the work at a business started up their own business doing the same work. But so it's not really a conversion. It's more just, we don't want to work for you and we're good at this, so we're going to do it on our own.
What was Republic Doors?
Republic Doors would be, I believe that would be a conversion because I think that I don't know who owns that business now, whether the bank owns it or whether...
It's a worker co-op.
Yeah. Right, but I don't know who they bought
it
from. The bank may have owned the property because the business shut down and went bankrupt. If it was still the business, the parent company or something that owned it, then it'd be pretty much a conversion. Yeah.
There may be more conversions in the future because a lot of baby boomers now are getting...
And Gar
had an article in the New York Times about that.
And that's why we're trying to train people in doing conversions right now, because it is a prime time. There's all these businesses out there where people, their kids don't want to run it, they're getting old enough that they can't run it, and they need to either sell it or close it down. By giving them the cooperative option, they're creating a legacy for themselves, right? They're not just shutting down this business and then they're Joe Schmo or whoever was running this business in this community for years. Now the person who started this business and then sold it to their community and created a long-standing anchored business in their community.
So is one of, what is it called, Mad what?
Mad Work, Madison Mad Work. Work.
That's the co-op of co-ops?
Yeah.
Is one of your businesses consulting with around the country?
Something that NADWORK does?
Yeah.
So we do a lot of networking around the country. We're working with different groups within the area as well as other states. Ohio, actually, Kent State, that's where those are the conversion people. Roy Messing works at the Ohio Employee Ownership Center. They are the conversion experts right now. And they've done work in Cincinnati and in Cleveland with the Evergreen Cooperatives in Cleveland. So we're pretty much out of time, so I'm just going to run through this real fast. So after you've done your feasibility study, you want to see whether it's a go or no go, right? This isn't going to work, this is going to work, this might work if we change this up or change this up. So let's change it up, and let's look back at whether it's feasible now and keep going as it is. You're going to determine how many members you need to run this business. We're running a restaurant. We've got to have 15 people to make this work, right? So we're going to need 15 members. We know if this is going to run, we need 15 members. How much do we want each of them to put in, right? The 15 original members. If you put $1,000, if we make our equity $1,000, all of a sudden we're going to have $15,000 as a business startup, and we can then take larger loans out if we need to. But how much do we need from our member equity just to get this off the ground? How much are we going to make stock prices? Planning and financing, this is the one that I just want. Business plan. Right? If you are going to have a successful business, you're either going to get really lucky and nail it, or you're going to have a really good business plan and nail it. Right? But if you have a really good business plan and you've done your feasibility research, you're going to have a successful business. It's going to work, right? I mean, it's like cooking, right? Unless some unforeseen economic change happens that could sink it, right? You've got a good business plan. I've created a good recipe. I've taken this to a banker friend. I've run this by John at NADWORK. He's run it by Ann Reynolds at UW Center for Cooperatives. Everybody has given me input on this, us input on this, and we've adjusted. We have a successful business plan. When you take that to the banker, because you've got $15,000 to the startup and you need another $90,000 for your small business loan, the bank's going to look at your business plan and they're going to go, "Ah, we're going to give you some money, right? This looks like a good business." So, business plan. When you're doing this, when you get down to this point, it's time to take time to make a good business plan, a very solid business plan. These four basics of a business plan, just four. Business plans can seem really daunting. If you go online and you look at some of them, it's like, oh yeah, but how are you going to do this, right? You start this with these four. You need a description of the business, you need a marketing plan, you need a management plan, and you need to know how you're going to manage your finances. As long as those four things are taken care of, and depending on what business you're starting, it will determine how in-depth each one of those things is, right? I mean, if you're starting up that storefront on a street, or you're starting up a grocery cooperative, your marketing plan is going to be pretty in-depth. You're going to need it to be in-depth, right? Your management plan is going to be pretty in-depth. You have a big organization you're trying to run. We're starting up a painting cooperative with five of us, you know, throwing some ladders on top of a car. Our marketing plan is going to be pretty basic, right? Management plan is almost non-existent because we're all running it pretty much together, right? But these four things will be in a good business plan. And depending on how complicated your business is, will determine how complicated each one of these things to be. But this is where you need to really focus. And this is where you go and you get somebody like me from Madison Worker Cooperatives. Where in Philadelphia, you have PACA. There's networks like us all over the country that will work with you to develop a business plan, work with you to review your business plan, make sure that they have contacts, that your business plan will get reviewed by financial people. Your business plan will then get looked at so that when you're ready to open up the cooperative, when you're ready to the next step, to start it up and go to work, you're all in a good place because you all have taken time, you've worked together from the very beginning, and you've created this good business plan for this cooperative, and you're going to be successful. And the trick is, we don't want people to be unsuccessful, because we've got a good growing movement here, and we want people when they start the businesses for them to work. So those seven things, if those are walked through, then you're going to create a successful business. And then for resources to help you, Here, we have Madison Worker Cooperatives, we have UW Center for Cooperatives. Nationally, we have the U.S. Federation of Worker Cooperatives. There's professional cooperative developers. Cooperative development services exist around the country. They're CDS. They work with a lot of grocery startups. They don't really do much worker cooperatives. For worker cooperatives, your main resources are local networks or universities that have, and there's not many of those. It's mostly local networks. And then, if you want to write this down, no, it's not showing up. So MadWork, you can email us at madwork@gmail.com. It's cut off there. That's my email address. You can contact me anytime. info@usworker.coop will give you the federation. Everybody is networked now. One of the things that's been done in the last year is this creating these networks like Madison Worker Cooperatives and Dane Cooperative Alliance. And that means that if you ask me a question and I don't know, I've got people all around the country that somebody's got the answer, and we're now networked. So wherever you are, you're going to be able to find help and the services you need to start up a cooperative.
Is that John underline?
Oh, that should be John underscore, yeah. The whole thing is underline. I don't know why I did that.
Okay.
Cool.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
We're going to come back at the top of the hour with Tom Gehrke to talk about the debt-based economy. And he's with Strike Debt and is working on developing debtors' unions. So come back at the top of the hour for that.
And one other thing, I will put this PowerPoint presentation. If you go to MadWork at MadWork.com, MadWork.org. It's not co-op, right?
Org.
MadWork.org. I'm sorry, my brain just blanked. If you go to MadWork.org, we have a resources page on our website, and I'll put this PowerPoint on that resources page.
All right.
Org is
O-R-C. How do
you put it?
Right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.